So they say. But will they live to see tomorrow? 720 WGN, John Landecker at 836. With Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. How are you?
Hey, John. Great. I'm doing great. Very busy, but great. How have
Good.
You been?
Busy, but great. As a matter of fact, I just played an edited trailer there for the film Sinners, which I saw over the weekend. And I believe you have seen that, too.
And, I have.
it is becoming a close to a cinematic phenomenon to a certain degree, that it outperformed expectations its first week out. I believe it's somewhere around $48 million. And then in its second week, it only dropped maybe 10%, which is that's a good thing. So it seems to be getting good word of mouth. It had great reviews and certainly a different movie, unlike anything I think I've ever seen, and one that you can't give away the twist at the end because it would really ruin it. But what did you think of it?
I completely agree, especially that part about, you know, talking a little bit too much about the film. I don't want to give too much away. I know the trailers, give you flashes and glimpses of what audiences can come to expect. However, I do think that the easiest way to describe this movie without giving away too much is just to give you what I consider an incredibly brief plot synopsis.
Sure.
And then you just have to go in ready to go on a ride. And essentially, Sinners is about two twin brothers returning from Chicago down to the Mississippi Delta, which is where they're originally from, because they want to start their own juke joint. And it takes place in, I believe, 1932. And when they arrive back home and get the plans going to get their opening night up and running, they are unaware that evil has found its way into their part of the Delta. Now, what that evil is, I don't want to say too much. I want the audiences to, you know, experience that. Now, granted, again, trailers may give you hints, but you're not going to know the full picture until you actually see the film. But this is a movie that is written and directed by Ryan Coogler. And if that name is familiar, it's because he was the director of Black Panther and Black Panther 2. So he's been working with the Marvel Cinematic Universe for about the last 10 years. And this is his first film since Creed, which was a collaboration with Michael B. Jordan, who is the star of this film, that obviously audiences resonated with because it spawned two sequels. And this, however, is his first original film in 10 years. It is also, as you were mentioning, the money that it's making. It actually, I believe, has one of those great little asterisk-like awards that you can give a film, because the percentage drop that it had from weekend one to weekend two is pretty much unheard of.
Right.
It was that good. The movie's doing that well.
Right.
That it made a splash in its opening weekend, did outperform. And the drop off was so marginal that you could almost consider it like it was the week of Sinners at the box office instead of just two different weekends. So this is a film, though, that is stacked with talent from top to bottom, both in front of and behind the camera. They shot this movie with two different formats, I believe, but IMAX really shines. So if you're wondering, should I see this on an IMAX screen? Should I see this on a standard screen? Chase down the IMAX times, because the film really does look incredible to see on a giant screen. And just to give some shout outs to people in the cast who I think were very strong performers, obviously Michael B. Jordan, he's playing the role of twins. I think he does this so well, John, I kind of got lost in the fact it was one actor playing two roles.
I agree totally.
And we've gotten to a point, I think, with our visual effects trickery, you know, the magic of movies is what I like to call it,
mm-hmm.
that I really forget that they clearly had to film this at two different, you know, each particular shot was filmed two different ways. They do a very good job, though, with costuming and his performance in the subtleties, the personality traits of the two brothers, to where you always know who you're looking at. You're never going to get lost watching this movie and know which brother it is. You've also got Haley Steinfeld, Jack O'Connell, Wunmi Mosaku. Those are three great actors who definitely, you know, support the overall story in their own way. And then there's a big debut in this film by a young musician, now actor, who made a very big splash named Miles Caton. And I think the first time you see him and the first time you hear him sing, you're going to be just sucked right in, and you're going to want to know everything that happens to his character for the rest of the film. And then I cannot go without saying Delroy Lindo.
Oh, yeah.
One of my all-time favorite actors.
Right.
The man just completely dials it up to 11 from moment one, and it's just a joy to watch on the screen. And not since The Five Bloods have I seen him with this kind of material to play with. So you have a movie that runs about 2 hours and 17 minutes, and it doesn't waste a single one. The music is another big one. Ludwig Göransson collaborating once again with Ryan Coogler after their MCU collaborations. Absolutely fantastic music in the film, and the way that it's woven into the story, particularly with certain shots and how it's all cut together, there were moments where I was like, oh, this is why I love going to the movies. That's what I was thinking half the time I was watching this, while I was also trying to stay engrossed in what was going on. So Sinners is a big winner. Absolutely. It's the one I'm telling everybody, leave the kids at home, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
This is a hard R film.
Oh, is it
very
ever?
Hard R.
Yeah.
I got to qualify that. But this is one you want to run. Do not walk. See this in theaters before it leaves.
Yeah, and I think it will be in theaters for a while. I mean,
for a good while. Yeah. Usually films like this are probably signed up for a solid 90-day run.
Yeah.
In theaters. Now, that does not mean it'll stay on IMAX screens for 90 days. So
right.
that's why I was emphasizing, go see it while you can on an IMAX screen. But it will probably have the full boat. And then I don't know if you knew this, John, but I guess Ryan Coogler signed a very special deal with this film that after 25 years, he owns the film.
No, I didn't know that.
That is a groundbreaking deal for any director because studios have never, to my knowledge, that is not something that's really been signed off on in the modern era, if ever. And he had so much faith in the work. And now that it's, you know, raking in the dough and mm-hmm. the critical success, I mean, I think, I don't want to say this is absolutely a movie we're going to see talked about during awards season, but I would be happy if it was.
Ooh,
because I thought on every level, it was the kind of movie you want to see on a big screen.
Well, I don't know about the awards situation, although just generally speaking, after going to movies for as many years as I have, and you never really know what direction the people who make decisions on awards are going to go or what's in their heads. But, you know, the combination of elements in this film may have been, you may have seen them separately, but not quite the way they're put together in Sinners, and also the underlying message that has to do, I guess, with family to a certain extent.
Yes.
So
yes.
If it's not nominated for something, somebody's not doing their, somebody's not on the ball. We're going to do more.
Correct.
We're going to do more with Blake Stubbs when we come back on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, there's part of the Sinners soundtrack. John Landecker with Blake Stubbs. We're talking movies. We had a discussion about the film Sinners. And while we're during break, I heard from the producer booth, a couple of people that saw the Sinners film over the weekend and totally concurred that it's absolutely fantastic. But let's move on to some other film. Well, first of all, what is this play you're in?
Oh, yeah. So I, at a community level, I live down in Peoria, and at a community level, I auditioned for a production of Pride and Prejudice, the famous Jane Austen novel.
Yeah.
I was cast in the role of Mr. Collins, the vicar cousin of the main character, who's more or less structured to be the comic relief. I think the play script, depending on format, you know, it runs about 100 pages, which is not outlandish or anything for what we're doing. But I think I'm in there for about 37 of it, so it's right in my wheelhouse as a supporting actor. We're just getting underway, so no, I don't know my lines. No, I don't know where I have to stand yet, but the script is highlighted and I'm ready to get going.
It's all a process.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
So,
well, break a leg. That's what
Thank you.
The expression is. So let's move on to The Accountant 2.
Yes.
Accountant 1, although it was just called The Accountant, is one of my actual favorite movies. I've seen it multiple times. I don't know what exactly you would do with a sequel, but apparently they've done something. Have you seen Accountant 2?
I have. I managed to catch that just last night. And I'll be honest with you, John, I was also quite the fan of the first film.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, though, that first film is 9 years old. So for a sequel to show up, and I think I didn't hear that The Accountant 2 was going to be a thing until just about 2 or 3 months ago. And so I thought that this, I mean, obviously this film had been well put together and was done and ready for a release, but I felt like it was fast-tracked in its announcement, its marketing, and its release. So as soon as I heard about it, I did not have to wait very long at all. And I keep pretty good tabs on these kind of things, as you know, so I was right. I was pleasantly surprised. To also hear that, you know, tonally, this one was going to stretch a little bit more into the comedic buddy comedy chemistry between John Bernthal and Ben Affleck, who play the two main leads of the film. And not to spoil the original film, but hey, it's 9 years old, so I'll just put this out there. The dynamic that you get at the end of the first film, where when they come back into contact with each other after many years of never seeing each other, and you realize that, like, yes, this is an action film, yes, this has been very serious, but these two have some kind of comedic spark, as clearly, like, friends and actors and everything, but it really worked on screen. They lean very heavily into it in The Accountant 2. So you get much more of a brotherly dynamic that builds off of the narrative of the first film, insofar as, like, all of their scenes together feel like we're getting caught up on lost time. And their back and forth banter really works for me in this film. The action in the film, once again, this is directed by Gavin O'Connor, who directed the first film. These guys all have a very good sense of chemistry in terms of how to deliver solid action, and also a very strong on-screen chemistry dynamic between the two male leads. The I don't want to spoil too much of the story, but essentially Christian Wolf is brought back into business, so to speak, when a key character from the original film suddenly, in the very beginning of this one, finds himself in a very tough situation. And Bernthal has to join him in order to resolve the issue. I don't want to say any more than that, other than you will see J.K. Simmons was in the original film. We'll see him in this.
Yeah.
Cynthia Di Robinson is also back as Mary Beth Medina. And I think that having all these essential characters from the first film really made the transition into watching this as a sequel that, you know, is in real time, acknowledging the events of the last film were 8 to 9 years ago. It helped me stay in the world that I fondly remembered from the first time I watched the original film. And there are some new characters that enter the fray, but honestly, John, the thing that, and I want to say very clearly, I did enjoy my time at the movies watching this film. This is a good night out to watch a buddy comedy action film. I have just a few criticisms about it. One in particular, I think it takes just a hair too long to get the two brothers back together. I almost wanted them together immediately because I enjoyed the dynamics so much. And I also think that at 2 hours and 12 minutes, it might be running a hair too long, because in the end, the thing that makes a sequel like this work is when you lean into that comedic transition, so that if we're going to build this for more films, if we're ever going to see these characters again, it sort of takes on a light B-movie, B-action movie dynamic, but all of the skill and talent that's on screen is A-level. So that way, we always want more. And I think if the movie had clocked in at just under 2 hours, I would have been much higher on it in terms of how much I enjoyed it, but I did enjoy my time watching it. I think that it is, if you're looking for a lighter fare, something to, you know, go out and see, and you're looking for a nice little action joint, this is your movie.
Well, the thing is, though, the thing that attracted me about The Accountant, the first one, was this whole thing about this autistic, to a certain extent, child who grew up with an unbelievably demanding father and became an accountant, but also at the same time became he became an accountant to bad people. Let's just put it that
bad
way.
Bad people, yes.
But you,
very
but you
bad
never
people.
Really see it. You never really see it until you know that the feds are after him. And that's mm-hmm. the whole deal. You know, when they find out that he's doing, how could this accountant who has this storefront business at this strip mall, how could he be involved in anything? And then they realize that he's doing the returns for every other business that's in the strip mall, and that amounts to a lot of money. And they're closing in, and he gets away. But that was like, to me, the cool part of the film. I mean, here's a guy who's got a Jackson Pollock painting in lieu of cash payment on the ceiling of his Airstream that he mm-hmm. keeps in a storage unit. That was just, those are some of the things that really attracted me to that. I don't know what they would do with that, but I guess I'm going to have to go find out for myself.
I do think you'll enjoy this one. I think that it does take departures from a few of the things that you loved about the first film. But what you come into this one accepting is that he, you know, ends the film as sort of a necessary evil because he does good with what he's doing. Yes. And they really do make a strong attempt to right the ship of his narrative arc. And you get a much better sense by the end of it of, in my opinion, why this franchise got a sequel. Because it's weird to call it a franchise. We would never right. have called it a franchise until now right. it has a sequel. So let's just slap the label on it and call it what they're trying to make it. And I think that it is positioned in a way where if this does well and they want to go beyond this, there are opportunities available to them narratively that they could do something with it. Right. And here's the thing. If this is the type of thing that I'm going to get maybe 3 or 4 different movies of, I'm actually okay with that. And I say that because in a world where we've had sequel upon sequel and you yes. know, the MCU, which is all woven together now in some way, shape, or form.
Yes,
and
it
Mission
is.
Impossible is coming to a close,
yep.
As we know here in May. Movies like this are the type of thing that I think the industry needs to get back to making more of. They can make movies like this good, for less money than they make these much bigger properties. And if stars want to attach themselves to them, I think long term, it could be good for the industry because we, as audience members, will enjoy going and seeing our favorite people on screen, but also in movies that are just, you know, on a base level, good.
Well,
and
you know,
that's really what we need to be doing.
That I hadn't been back to a movie theater per se for quite a while, but it was Sinners that brought me back in there, and I was glad that I went. So. You know, if it can get people, and I'm sure that the Mission Impossible is going to be unbelievable since it's the last one.
Yes.
And they've all been relatively good, some of them spectacular. And, you know, we're going to be all sitting there wondering, how is Tom Cruise hanging on to the wing of that airplane while it's in the air?
Yes.
But that's what we go to the movie to see.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We just got a couple of minutes left. Is there anything you want to add about anything?
Well, I was just going to say that I was at Roger Ebert's film festival this last week in Champaign, yes. Ebert Fest, as it is known. There were just a couple of quick little things that I wanted to bring out of it. One, I was able to finally see Megalopolis on a big screen.
Oh, my God.
That is a divisive film. We don't have time to talk about it, but I am in the camp of being one who enjoyed it. And the Q&A afterwards with Francis Ford Coppola via Zoom was incredible.
He sounds
like a guy 30 years his junior. He is in the game. I don't feel like he's had any ideas about giving up on making films. And that made me very happy as an audience member. And then the last thing is there were 3 films. I just want to throw the titles out. 2 of them do not have distribution yet, but write these down. And if you ever hear them again, try to see them.
Okay.
The 2 are A Little Prayer and a movie called Color Book. Those 2 films really touched me. I really connected with them, and I loved them. But come to find out, they don't have actual distribution yet.
Right,
there are talks.
Right.
Things will happen, and I hope that audiences get to see that. The last film I want to mention is available right now on Netflix. It's called His 3 Daughters, written and directed by Azazel Jacobs. And that film is about three daughters dealing with their father in hospice in his final days. And it is deep. There is humor in it, but it is a deep family drama that I would highly recommend people watch. If you're looking for, you know, maybe a tearjerker or something to deeply connect with, His Three Daughters is the movie that is right now readily available to watch at home.
All right, Blake. Thanks. Great.
Thank
you. Talking to you, and look forward to reconnecting over the summer as these studios release movies they've been holding on to just for this time of the year. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, as always.
There he goes, Blake Stubbs. Takes his movie seriously, which is a good thing.